We will have no other king but King Jesus. If we go to the scriptures, we find, then all the elders of Israel, this is 1 Samuel chapter 8, gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah, and said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, Give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Samuel, Hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. The Black Robe Regiment, worth their weight in gold to the cause of liberty and freedom in the American Republic. Now, when I make that statement and read from Scripture, from the Bible, as I just did, 1 Samuel chapter 8, I hope that you take from that that it was not God's idea that we should have a king. Now, throughout the centuries of mankind, we've had all kind of kings. And of course, many of them considered themselves divine right kings, just like George III considered himself a divine right king. But our founding fathers realized that this king, and anyone that disagrees with this, you certainly have to read in the Declaration of American Independence what they said in the 28 indictments against the king and the parliament. And of course, you'll talk to some people and say, well, it wasn't really the king, it was the parliament. No, the truth of the matter is that the king and the parliament said, we have the power to make you do anything we want. That's a fact. I can prove it to anybody. The only thing they said is, we cannot make you do something that's unnatural. Now, when we think about these, who were these Christian American patriot preachers? And why were they so valuable to us and so hated by the British king and parliament? And they were very different, I would suggest to you, than so many of today's clergy. Well, except one, of course, at least, the one that's standing in front of you today. As we in these times face the return of the divine right kings through unconstitutional government actions. And so when you think about what they did, and you think about, for example, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven, preached by Reverend John Peter Muhlenberg from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, verse 1. In the language of the Holy Writ, he said, there is a time for all things, there is a time to preach and a time to fight. And now is the time to fight. In 1745, he was named chaplain. Let me back up a bit here. My page is confused. He actually was a chaplain. He was also in the House of Burgesses. And he also, in that preaching on that particular day that I just talked to you about, he threw off his robes and he actually showed that he was a colonel in the Continental Army. And he led his people off to fight. At the end of his sermon, January 21st, 1776, John Peter Muhlenberg threw off his clerical robes to reveal the uniform of an officer in the Continental Army. Drum roll began. Men kissed their wives, and they walked down the aisle to enlist. He and his men endured the freezing winter of Valley Forge and saw action at Brandywine, Germantown, Monmouth, and Stony Point. He helped force British General Cornwallis to surrender at Yorktown. He finished the war as a major general. Now, these patriot preachers were great recruiters, actually better recruiters than pretty much anyone else, because they could biblically defend the justice of the American cause and were willing to fight as well to defend their beliefs and country against tyranny. And, of course, I stand wearing colonial uniform, as they would be wearing, and also armed. which of course surprises a lot of people. The man must be bad indeed who can look upon the events of the American Revolution without feeling the warmest gratitude towards the great author of the universe, whose divine interposition was so frequently manifested in our behalf. And it is my earnest prayer that we may so conduct ourselves as to merit a continuous and continuation of these blessings which we have hitherto been favored. Who do you think said that? George Washington, in a letter to Reverend Samuel Langdon of New Hampshire, who I'll be mentioning a little bit more about, he said that. Now, Samuel Langdon, 1723 to 1797, buried in the Revolutionary War Cemetery in Hampton Falls, New Hampshire, on Nason Street, was the 13th president of Harvard College, serving from 1774 to 1780, and presiding over the college during the American Revolution. In 1745, he was named chaplain of a New Hampshire regiment sent to Cape Breton Island to lay siege to the fortress of Louisbourg. Samuel Langdon preached the sermon, "Government Corrupted by Vice," in 1775, during a key turning point at the beginning of the American Revolution. And of course, these things that I am citing to you today, I'd like to give you the source material. Frank Moore, the editor of the Patriot Preachers of the American Revolution with Biographical Sketches, 1766 to 1783. I make point of that because a lot of people say, well, this is your opinion. No, this is not my opinion. This is historical fact, and I can prove it to anyone who wants to know. Langdon was also an ardent patriot, and he graduated from Harvard College in 1740 during the administration of Governor Jonathan Belcher, for which Belchertown is named, and if you've ever heard of him, he was called the revivalist governor of Massachusetts. He promoted these kind of Christian meetings amongst the chaplains, and he was a very unique governor in that. And of course, he was also governor when the governor of Massachusetts and New Hampshire was also an overseer of Harvard College. And guess who was in that class of 1740 with Samuel Langdon? Samuel Adams. Langdon called for the nation to return to the true principles of Christianity and the morality of the Ten Commandments. It was the abandonment of true Christianity, Langdon said, that caused the British government to be the way it was in 1775. Let me read that again. He said it was the what the British had done was their abandonment of true Christianity had caused the British government to be the way it was in 1775. So when we say we'll have no other king but King Jesus, we can certainly understand that thinking. In 1774, a man named Lemuel Haines joined the Minutemen of Granville. In 1775, he marched with his militia company to Roxbury, Massachusetts, following the news of Lexington and Concord. In 1776, he accompanied them in the garrisoning of the recent captured Fort Ticonderoga. Now, who was Lemuel Haines, who lived from July 18, 1753 to September 28, 1833? He was called the Black Bishop in a White World. A lot of people have never heard of him. You find in the New England Pulpit and the American Revolution by Dr. Alice Baldwin, great book, illustrates how the preachers of the early American era thought and practiced just the opposite as people do today. Mountains of research in colonial sermons, tracts, pamphlets, and other publications reveals how the pulpits of colonial America rang constantly on all the aspects of the public square, good rulers, good laws, good forms of government, and the blessings of liberty. We especially hear of those who chose values of biblical order that became the battle cries of the American independence. By the time of the Revolutionary War, the chaplains had carved for themselves a place with the military, which was not within the chain of command, but was nevertheless considered almost indispensable. For years, in every little valley, and sequestered nook of the English colonies, the clergy had taught the doctrines of freedom and preached the duty of resistance to oppression. We find that in a book by Joel T. Headley called Forgotten Heroes of Liberty. Now, many of you have probably been to Bedford, Massachusetts, not far from here. Perhaps you've seen this flag that's on display there in their library, and they have it hermetically sealed. You have to have permission to get in there. Mrs. Lear and I and a couple of others got permission to go in there and see it. And of course, on April 19, 1775, hostilities broke out between the colonies and British in Lexington and Concord. You know that. Igniting the American Revolutionary War. Now, this Bedford flag, I'm not going to read a whole lot more about it, but I'm going to tell you that the Latin words on it, vince aut morir, encircling the arm, mean conquer or die. People believed that. I'll also show you another one that I like very much, the Grosvenor Standard number 15, which says on it, resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. I wonder how many Americans believe that now, but that is a general belief, and of course we know Thomas Jefferson liked this flag very much. A lot of people would say, how could that possibly be that somebody would believe that, Christian doctrine-wise, but it's true, and it can be found biblically. We especially hear of those choice values of biblical order that became the battle cries of American independence. By the time of the Revolutionary War, as I said, these Black Robe Regiment, as they were called, and that name was put upon them, you might say, by Prime Minister Waldo, when the King said to Prime Minister Waldo, why is Cousin America rebelling against me? And he said, well, methinks, my lord, Cousin America is being led astray by a Presbyterian parson. So, of course, we talk about Reformation theology. That's more than the scope of what I'm here to talk about today. But the black robe was the idea, some of us would look at it like a choir robe today, that these were preachers who were preaching things that, of course, we rarely, if ever, hear from the pulpit anymore. We also find a lot of these teachings that they did and a lot of their sermons, which incidentally, one of my ancestors was a printer in Boston, Massachusetts, and printed a lot of their sermons the way today we have sermons on audio tape or videotape or, you know, YouTube or any of those kind of things. In those days, there were people who actually wanted to hear these preachers, were not part of their church, but they waited on Monday morning to have their sermons printed so they could read them. John Winthrop Thornton, the pulpit of the American Revolution, records a lot of these. And of course, the writings of George Washington by Jared Sparks, and I don't know how many of you have actually heard or read that, but the actually the daily orders of General Washington are recorded, are very interesting what General Washington expected. For example, General Washington wanted these chaplains with every military unit and gave them double pay at captain's rate, considering them invaluable to the American cause. In the orderly book, page 402, I mentioned Jared Sparks has actually published that, General Washington strongly recommended. Now, when the general strongly recommends for you to do something, it's probably a good idea, particularly it was George Washington in those days. He strongly recommended that all soldiers and officers not on duty attend services preached by the chaplain. Not just services conducted by the chaplains, preached by the chaplains. We have records of their sermons from such sources as Political Sermons of the American Founding Era, 1730 to 1805, by Ellis Sandoz. And I want to give you a few titles here. There are thousands of them, and I have them in my personal library and have read many of them. Quite lengthy, by the way, and as I mentioned this morning, 2 hour sermon in the morning, 2 hour in the afternoon, and if the preacher couldn't do the 2 hours in the morning, he was thought to have been sick. What's wrong with you? Why can't you do that? 2 hours in the afternoon. And the people, of course, would sit there and listen. And if it was really cold, they could bring their dog to lay down at their feet and keep them warm. Here's a good one. Civil magistrates must be just in the ruling of the fear of God. Charles Chauncey from Boston. Now, that is, of course, a sermon that comes from 2 Samuel chapter 23. And I have personally been spoken in 59. No, how could it be 59? We only have 50 states. I'm just kind of making that as a joke because there are some people in high-ranking office that don't have it right. 49 out of 50 capitals, and I have charged all the legislators this. You must rule in the fear of God or you will be judged. Okay, that's a promise from the Lord. So that's where that came from. Or this one, the snare broken, Jonathan Mayhew. Such powerful preaching there in Boston that the stamp tax was repealed because of that preaching. Okay, an oration upon the beauties of liberty by John Allen from Boston. Divine judgments upon tyrants, Jacob Cushing and Waltham. And this is one of my favorites. A dialogue between the devil and George III, tyrant of British. Of Britain. And by the way, it was anonymous.
Oh, shucks. I wanted to hear the name of that.
I know. The Battle of Bennington was fought by a band of volunteers opposing the advance of British General Burgoyne's army. Among these volunteers was Chaplain Thomas Allen. He was called the Fighting Parson of Bennington. Before the battle began, he led his soldiers in prayer that God would grant victory. That's pretty bold. Other notable chaplains in the War for Independence included Benjamin Trumbull of Connecticut, who in one battle sat on his horse in full view of the enemy, firing his musket and ducking behind the horse's neck if ever a bullet came close. And Samuel Spring of Northbridge, Massachusetts, was another courageous chaplain, serving as part of the 1775 expedition into Quebec with Arnold's army before deploying. He preached a sermon to the troops from Exodus chapter 33, verse 15. Lord, if your spirit does not go with us, then do not send us. Spring starved along with the rest of the army on the mission, and they all rejoiced when a moose was finally shot to help relieve their extreme hunger. And of course, another favorite of mine in particular, the Reverend William Emerson, who is the grandfather, of course, of Ralph Waldo Emerson, who was actually there at the bridge, who was loading and handing muskets up to Minutemen who were firing from there. He was at the Battle of Concord in 1775 to help spiritually encourage those fighting the British. Dressed in his black clerical robes and with his musket in hand, he exhorted the others, "Let us stand our ground. If we die, let us die here." Encouraging a frightened 18-year-old, he told him, "Stand your ground, Harry. Your cause is just, and God will bless you." Timothy Dwight, Yale president, volunteered for the Continental Army when his college was threatened by the British. He once preached a sermon to the troops that was so relevant to what was specifically occurring at the time that American General Israel Putnam actually questioned whether his text was in the Bible or whether he had invented it. It was indeed in the Bible. Numerous other notable chaplains in the Revolution, including the signer of the Declaration, buried, of course, in the Granary Cemetery, Color Guard of Massachusetts Society, SAR, has many times gone over and been right by his grave, and that was Robert Treat Payne. A lot of people don't know that he was actually a chaplain. Now, as I bring this brief narrative on the Black Robe Regiment, worth their weight in gold, and of course reminding you that colonial preachers could go on for a couple hours, but I'm not going to do that today, unless you want me to. And I don't regret things that I've shared. I do regret that I don't have really more time to share more, because there's dozens more to talk about, including the 26 armed chaplains at Bunker Hill. 26 armed chaplains at Bunker Hill. Okay? A lot of people just think today, I mean, pastors don't want to be involved in a lot of things. Now, according to Benjamin Franklin Morris, the author of Christian Life and Character of the Civil Institutions of the United States, he said, "No class of men contributed more to carry forward the revolution and to achieve our independence than did the ministers. By their prayers, patriotic sermons, and services, they rendered the highest assistance to the civil government, the army, and the country." But of course, I would be most certainly remiss if I did not mention the patriot pastor, or parson, as he often was called, of Lexington, Jonas Clark, who influenced both John and Samuel Adams, John Hancock, and hundreds of others to join the American cause. They were, of course, called Whigs. He authored the Lexington Tea Burning Declaration on December 13, 1773, 3 days before the Boston Tea Party happened. He was at the battle on Lexington Green on the ever-memorable day, April 19, 1775 A.D., Anno Domini, year of our Lord. Many of the Minutemen were in his congregation, including Deacon Captain John Parker. When Samuel Adams asked Patriot Pastor Jonas Clark if his men would fight, he answered, "Of course they will. I taught them to. I trained them to." His testimony is in the Lexington book that I've had published for us and that we distribute right here. It's a short narrative, and by the way, there are hundreds and hundreds of affidavits saying, "We did not fire first." And there's a whole theological reason why we didn't. And of course, those of you that have been on Lexington Green and those that have gone on the tour there that I have given, you'll see a stone that says, "Do not fire until fired upon. But if they mean to have a war, let us start here." So they were not the ones that fired first. Just recently, a house in Lexington was about to be destroyed, a colonial house, and somebody showed up and said, "You know, it's a heartbreak to think to have this colonial house ripped down." And being somebody and using 18th century language, I'd say providential language of saying the divine hand of providence reached down and touched somebody and said, "You know what, if you'll sell me the house for $50,000, I'll refurbish it. Or, you know, bring it back to colonial state." So this fella got a hold of it and they started working. And they found a trunk. And in the trunk was some things in there that had been preserved from the day. One of them was a document, an affidavit document by Thomas Fessenden. Now get this. Today we record things on video and audio and so forth and so on. John Parker, Captain John Parker, said to Thomas Fessenden, who was a Lexington Minuteman, "You know, Thomas," and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, "you're really not the best of shot and whatever else. I got another plan for you today. I want you to stand over there across from the green, and I want you to stand in the field out of harm's way, and I want you to record what these people, the British regulars, do to us." And in this document that was found was this affidavit from Thomas Fessenden saying they fired on us. See? So that'd be like saying, "Okay, we're having a protest meeting this afternoon and I need a videographer not to be in part of the protest but to video what's actually going on." So when we look at that and we think about the fact that the testimony in this Lexington book, and many of these things are still in Massachusetts government, still there, to that proving the point. And so it's a very powerful, but very short, I will say, read of truth about the American cause. Someone has stolen my country. I didn't sell her. I didn't give her away. And I want her back. And I want her back now.